Welcome back, everybody. And a happy Wednesday afternoon to each and every one of you. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. A bit of an update. There is a two-car accident on John Nolan Drive in Madison. It's a doozy. Traffic has stopped in the outgoing lanes. This is the corner of John Nolan and Lakeside. We are getting reports of officers, fire department, and an ambulance on scene. Thanks so much to our listener, Jason in Madison, for texting in that update. Remember, you can always let us know about breaking news from your community while I am on the air, 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. Civic. Thanks again to Jason in Madison. I'm joined this half hour by Lieutenant Diane Goldstein, the Executive Director of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership. We're going to put the website for that organization that you can find at lawenforcementactionpartnership.org in our show notes for today. Remember, you can find our show notes and podcasts of these live broadcasts anywhere you get your favorite podcasts at, but always at civicmedia.us. Also on Spotify and Apple Pods. Welcome back, Lieutenant. Before the break, we were talking a bit about the idea of civil asset forfeiture. Before we move on to that, I want to be sure that we have talked about and expressed what we need to discuss when it comes to the idea of what we are no longer going to call cashless bail, but what we will call, thanks to my friend Jacob, threat-based bail decisions or public safety-based bail decisions. Anything that we left out in this discussion that you think listeners should know?
No, I think, you know, I love that a listener called in because, quite frankly, I'm going to steal that line because that is exactly what we should be having, this very, very frank discussion. You know, bail reform, the criminal justice system in its entirety is very nuanced and very layered. And what people don't understand is that the harms of criminal justice interventions, and we should hold people accountable. I'm not suggesting we don't, but what we see is if you are blue collar, living in poverty, you know, from a community that may not be as resourced as others, is that you are more likely to be kept in jail because you can't afford bail, you lose your job, then you get evicted, you can't make your car payments, you know, so there's
the cascading impacts, yes.
The cascading vicious circle over this issue. And I think all of us need to take a step back and say, does that make us any safer, or does that put people who are already at risk that may, you know, now have to shoplift in order to buy diapers for their baby, right? So there's the complexities of criminal justice. You can't just criminalize people. There has to be a functioning system where we are not siloed off from each other, but there's investments in other infrastructure that is just as efficacious in preventing crime than just throwing cops out to solve socioeconomic issues.
Well, and I let's take a pause here because fundamentally, getting into what works for violence response, right, and policing and punishment, that is an element of our criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. Violence prevention should also be a part of our discussion about public health, safety, and wellness, as well as criminal justice. I don't hear anything about that from a certain category of folks, and I think that that's to our collective detriment. But more fundamentally, when we're talking about threat-based bail determinations as the gold standard, what we are saying as Americans and as folks that live in a democracy is that we understand that rich people are treated much differently by our criminal justice system than poor folks are, and that is bad. That is the core of what we're trying to say, that the long arm of justice should not vary based upon bank account. And that when we see that happening, that actually undermines community safety. It undermines the trust in our court system and justice system. And that overall has this degrading impact on our communities and on public safety writ large. It is that larger discussion about how we want our system to work, how we want people to be treated equally under the law, that is really behind this argument. And I am so appreciative of you being with us here to talk about this, Lieutenant Goldstein. Again, you can find out more about her organization, the Law Enforcement Action Partnership, by going to their website. That's lawenforcementactionpartnership.org. Lieutenant Goldstein, we've got about a minute left, and I'm going to ask my senior producer, Jamie, to schedule you right away to come back and talk about civil asset forfeitures.
Perfect.
At greater length. But in a nutshell, what are they, and criminal asset forfeitures in particular, and why should people be concerned about them?
Sure. I think, again, if you appreciate the constitutional protections that all of us should have, right? It's not just Americans. You know, I think people forget that the Constitution protects anyone who is in our country. And civil asset forfeiture reform is simply the government being able to take your money without a criminal conviction. And that, just like so many of the other policies that are going on, upends our Constitution. And if we value democracy, we should value due process.
Due process has become a concept that I think all of us used to take for granted, and that seems to be eroded more and more with each passing day. I'm going to talk about just that thing and what the most conservative Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals had to say about that this week in relation to the Alien Enemies Act. The Fifth Circuit, if you don't know who they are, they're stocked back to front with Trump-appointed judges. That comes up next right here.